Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Maria Carter, in for Steve Kraske. Are you an out-of-the-box thinker, or the let's-take-this-apart-to-see-how-it-works kind of person? On today's show, we'll celebrate what it means to tinker, how some people use conventional items in unconventional ways to bring us truly innovative inventions. Karen Wilkinson is a co-author of The Art of Tinkering and works as co-director of the Tinkering Studio. That's part of the Exploratorium at San Francisco's Museum of Science, Art, and Human Perception. Karen joins us by phone from San Francisco. Good morning, Karen.
Hi, good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, your book invites us to meet more than 150 makers working at the intersection of art, science, and technology. That sounds very broad. Who do you consider makers?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I think the makers within the book really run the gamut, from people who are hobbyists and enthusiasts, a 9-year-old girl who sent her Hello Kitty up into space, professional artists and engineers. I think anyone who has that sort of insatiable curiosity and uses their hands to help kind of figure things out that they're interested in, I'd call them a tinkerer.
Well, and if you flip through the book, there are just so many numerous examples of kind of just all sorts of things people have done. The book asks people to make music with walnuts and find other surprising ways to tinker. How did you get started in this way of thinking?
Well, I have to give credit to the Exploratorium. I've worked here for a while now, and it's this wonderful celebration. It's a museum, but it's a celebration of science, art, and technology. And those three, kind of as you mentioned, you know, the makers at the intersection of these, if you sort of drew a Venn diagram, that where those things all overlapped, there's a really sweet spot. And I think being here for as long as I have, I've been here for 15 years now, I've kind of been trained to notice and appreciate the interesting things that happen kind of at that intersection.
Well, and a lot of these projects, they sound a bit like MacGyver, you know, kind of look around you, see what you have, and make something. If I gave you some cardboard, chewing gum, matches, and a pen, would you or some of the other people be able to tinker with that and make it into something interesting?
Well, see, that's kind of the beauty of it. I think each person in tinkering would give a different take on it. But yes, it is kind of about thinking about materials in an unusual way. And in the Tinkering Studio, anyway, we like to combine high-tech things and low-tech things. So we appreciate both. But like, I think you said matchsticks. But let me give you an example with toothpicks instead of matchsticks. But we have a piece here that was created by Scott Weaver. It's in the book. He started it when he was 14 years old. It's made out of over 100,000 toothpicks. It's now 9 feet tall by 9 feet wide, and it's a sculpture that is a kind of his homage to San Francisco. So you see recognizable, iconic structures in it, but it's more than that. You can roll a ping pong ball down 7 different tours, quote unquote tours of San Francisco, and it just meanders back and forth around, you know, around the Golden Gate Bridge and Alcatraz, and it's, you know, for me, Scott is the perfect example of a tinkerer. He can't help but make. He's actually the produce manager at the grocery store near my house, which is how we met. And that's what I think is so exciting about making and tinkering, is that your neighbors are doing it.
Yeah.
You know, everyone in the community is doing it, really.
Well, speaking of community, let's find some tinkerers among our listeners. If you've come up with something neat or unusual as a result of tinkering efforts, we want to hear about it. Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Karen, you mentioned this toothpick San Francisco / pinball run. What's the most unusual combination of objects you've seen put together while tinkering?
Oh, gosh, most unusual. Well, I have an affinity for the craft kind of stuff. I guess I would have to say sewing with circuits. So using, instead of wires, using conductive thread, but then being able to sew it into a garment or, you know, just some sort of fiber-based creation. I love that mashup of kind of science and technology, high-tech, low-tech, traditional, non-traditional.
Well, and that probably kind of crosses a lot of boundaries between like fashion and, you know, I could see light up shirts and different things being a possibility with something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, well, the whole field of wearables is, you know, changing by the minute these days, but there are all sorts of things you can do with sensors where what you wear might change. You know, if you have LED lights, they would be in moving in response, changing in response to your movements. People have even been working with muscle wire to have a hat or some part of a garment change position. What that means, I didn't even know what this was not too long ago, but essentially muscle wire is a very thin, kind of almost hair-like wire that you can send a current through, and it'll go back to its original position. So, for instance, I can take the wire and bend it into an L, and if I send a current through it, it'll straighten back into a straight line. It's really cool. I mean, you know, I don't think there are really ways that can't kind of be pushed, really pushed. You know, you talked about thinking outside the box. It's so far beyond the box with some of this stuff. It's lots of fun.
Well, you mentioned muscle wire. Where do people learn about this stuff if they're kind of using stuff from around their house to tinker? You know, I guess what's that next step where you find out about things like muscle wire?
Well, I mean, of course, I would encourage you. We have a website for the Tinkering Studio, so I would encourage you to go there. It's tinkering.exploratorium.edu. But I think they even have one of these in Kansas, if I'm not sure, this summer maybe. I'd go to a maker fair or a mini maker fair. It's a great place to see all sorts of making and tinkering going on across lots of different genres. And you'll see the stranger things. I mean, we have something in the book where people, it's called Squishy Circuits. This woman, Anne-Marie Thomas, came up with this.
Are these the Play-Doh circuits?
Exactly. So it's things out of the kitchen cabinet where you can play with circuits, you know, so very familiar stuff. But then you can go to Maker Faire and look at things that use, there's something that even came out just recently where you can run conductive ink through your inkjet printer so you can print circuit-based stuff at home.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty new. I mean, I don't know how publicly available it is, but we... Part of the book that I love so much is it actually has conductive ink on the cover. We wanted readers to be able to tinker with their book.
And you give them a few ideas in there, too, about how to use that cover.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Joe from Leawood sent in a notice to us that for all interested tinkerers, the Nelson Atkins Education Department is starting to explore tinkering workshop activities. So besides Maker Faire, that might be another option for some of our listeners. And we have a caller, Matt from Baldwin City. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi. Do you have a question for us or a comment?
Well, you were soliciting things that had been tinkered, and I have something to tell you about.
Okay, and what is that?
Well, last year I was involved with our band in Lawrence puts on a Pi Day celebration on March 14th, and so we had also, as a part of this, put on a pie baking contest, and I decided to make an entry to that contest, and so my sweetheart and me at the time baked three lemon pies, which we into which we inserted copper and zinc electrodes and made them into batteries and used them to power an LED. Each pie produced 0.8 volts. We had about 2.4 volts of power coming out of three pies, and so you can power things with low consumption devices like LEDs with fruits and vegetables depending on their acidity, and this just kind of worked out. And then we served the pie too. Everybody got a chance to actually eat the batteries.
So. Well, you know, you mentioned Pi Day. That was obviously one inspiration for this. You know, what else made you kind of want to take this to the next level there and make something more than just a pie?
Well, is the idea of taking something that you would not expect to be part of an electrical circuit and, you know, an edible, a comestible item of some sort and turn it into a, something that was part of a, you know, part of an electrical circuit, I guess. It was kind of a lesson in physics and diet and just wacky Zany Numbers Fun, too.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. Thanks for your call, Matt.
Yeah, can sure. Have a great day.
Can I just mention Matt's example is a perfect one. It's, you know, this subversive, humorous take on this combination. I do have to tell him, Pi Day originated at the Exploratorium, and my friend Larry Shaw started it. Please send me a picture of your Pi tinkering. I would love to show that to him.
Can you help her out, Matt?
Oh, yeah. I'd be happy to do that, and I'll just get the information from your website.
Too. Okay, thanks so much. How much of this is just kind of people, looking at something and saying, what if?
I think it's all about that. I think it's, you know, the more you consider a material or a phenomena, remix them, as Matt's example, you know, combining those two, cooking and circuitry, you know, pretty wonderful. It's about that kind of reimagining or remixing. A really good example from the book, you know, that still, I can't describe how weird my first experience with Tape Agami was, but Danny Scheibel is someone who has pushed the boundaries of masking tape, you know, I think about as far as they can go. But he's created a technique for rolling it back in on itself and creating these three-dimensional sculptures completely out of masking tape.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking tinkering with Karen Wilkinson, co-author of The Art of Tinkering. Well, Karen, do you ever feel stuck and not particularly creative?
Yes. And that, you know, this is an interesting thing. I think often people take that personally, and I think that's an essential part of tinkering and making. You get stuck. You hit dead ends. And I think the beauty of, you know, kind of developing your practice or your instincts with tinkering is you get better and better about turning those failures into feedback or taking those dead ends and, like, going off and in a different direction in terms of another possible tangent to explore.
Okay, well, we have another local tinkerer, Paul from Raytown. Good morning, and what have you been up to?
Well, over the years, I've been taking things apart since I've been a kid, and a big part of my tinkering is repurposing things. And, you know, a big one actually for you is I found that neodymium magnets, they're in our speaker devices for things like smartphones and headphones. Well, they're very strong magnets. I've used them now where I just put them on the fridge. They're strong enough that I can hang up my tools and things. So, you know, that's a big part of my tinkering thing. Is I don't like to lose my parts, and so just reuse it. Repurposing, I think, is a big part of mine. So,
well, and what are some of the things that you've ended up reusing those magnets for?
Well, like I said, they're real strong. The fridge and the kitchen, I mean, it's cluttered with all kinds of paper. Typical magnets, even your ceramic magnets, they're not strong enough. Oftentimes, I'll put something on the fridge and it'll fall. So the neodymium magnets, neodymium is one of the rare earths. It's strong enough that a typical 8-inch crescent wrench will stay on the fridge comfortably without having to fall off. So that's one of my favorites, is the magnets alone is, you know, one of the big things that I recover.
That sounds like it could be an interesting fridge there.
Yeah, repurposing, I think is a big part of most tinkerers from friends of mine that I've talked to.
And Karen, is that something that you would agree with?
Yeah, definitely the repurposing. I mean, just as you mentioned, the neodymium magnets, they're really, really strong. They're kind of bizarrely strong. Some of them can be very tiny, but they can hold a great weight, you know, if they're doing something like hanging up tools. But I think it is this sort of being confronted with this thing, in this case a magnet, and seeing what it can do.
Well, you know, a lot of these projects kind of in your book, they, you know, you kind of present a tinkerer or a maker and show what they've done, and then, you know, you give an example, but you don't spell out in great detail, you know, this is step one, step two, step three. Is that on purpose?
It was intentional, and we didn't really know how it would be received. A lot of us on the tinkering team, anyway, felt really strongly about not wanting to give step-by-step directions or a recipe. That's part, well, an essential part of tinkering to us. You can make lots of things following those directions, but we're really interested in people. You know, we sort of give you a place to start in the genre, whatever it is, and then really want people to follow their own curiosity. Maybe get lost a little, come up against things that don't work, but I think if you're able to push through that, it's much more interesting to us for the outcomes to be varied instead of just following maybe an experiment that we did.
If someone's interested in just kind of giving something a try, what's a good introductory project for them?
Gosh, the squishy circuits is a good one because all you have to get is a battery and LED and the other stuff you have in your kitchen. I would say, though, really, either whether it's looking through the book or going to Maker Faire, I would say start with what resonates with you. There are easy ways you can get started, but the interesting thing, in every case in the book, you can start simple but complexify. So whether you're 15 or 55, there's going to be something that you can take further just because of who you are and the experience you bring to it.
And so Jonathan has sent us some resources, and we'll post them on our website, but he specifically mentions Hammerspace, Hackerspace, and Factor eFarm, which I think are all in Kansas City. So, you know, we'll have those up on our website for people interested in some local resources on that.
Hackerspaces are, Hackerspaces are a great resource. I would say, yes, look into local hackerspaces for sure.
You know, in a lot of these projects, it really is a combination of things that, you know, you can find around the house and then a little bit of electronics. Do people ever say, you know, is that an intimidation factor, I guess, for people, you know, the knowledge of, I don't know how to build a circuit that they just need to get comfortable with?
Yeah, I think it can be, absolutely. That's why, you know, for us, we do a lot of things with circuits. One, because they are infinitely tinkerable. And a lot of times, myself included, you know, the way I got introduced to them was through school and was a little bit intimidating. It wasn't until I got to the Exploratorium and saw this, I don't know, playful irreverence. maybe that's the wrong way to think about it, but it was so right for me, just in that you could have circuits out of things like Play-Doh or using thread or conductive paint and be able to, or take a toy apart and look at the way the inner workings of it worked and look at the circuitry involved. I think kind of building on those quirky or surprising aspects of circuits makes it a lot more accessible to others.
I was at home last night looking through the book. My niece, you know, she was getting ready for bed, and she wanted to take the book with her to bed. Had to argue over it. Is that a pretty common reaction from kids, that this is just, it seems something like that's kind of built into their natural curiosity, that they want to make things and, you know, are interested in this?
I think so. I mean, I think it's irresistible at all ages, personally, but I especially get excited when kids are excited about it as well. I think, you know, a lot of the things that we present do have this playful and whimsical side, for sure. And I think maybe it has to do with that combination of the art, science, and technology. I don't know, but I definitely think people, the responses that we get are deeply personal, and people seem pretty attached to it, which is great. I love that your niece wanted to take it to bed.
I told her she had to wait until tonight, so because I needed it. But and I think that's, to me, one of the strengths of the book is it's really fun to look at. You don't have to pick it up and feel like you're reading a manual. It's kind of almost a coffee table book where, you know, it's, at least for me, when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, that's really cool. Oh, I might be able to actually make that. Is part of the book just inspiration?
Yeah, I think so. And actually, it's fun to hear you say all these things about the book. I, you know, of course, this was our first book, and going into it, there were many, many unknowns. And what we really wanted to do was to inspire people, not intimidate people, show them examples of real people doing unusual things with familiar things and vice versa that were interesting or tinkerable in some way, and then give a way to get started yourself. And then also we have these grids attached to each one where there are all these tangents. So in the sewn circuit ones, for instance, there are people using something called EL wire, which is kind of like a long strand that you can sew that lights up. It kind of looks like a long neon line.
Mm-hmm.
There's, as I mentioned, the muscle wire that moves. There's ways of embedding it in with kind of sensors sewn into arm movements and all sorts of things, but all kind of connected to one artist that we worked with and had in residence, Grace Kim.
Well, let's go to one last Kansas City tinkerer. Kevin is calling from Kansas City, Kansas. And Kevin, what have you been tinkering with?
Well, discarded copying machine. If you remember, copying machine used to be huge and take up about the size of a desk in an office. And, of course, they've downsized. But those old machines have just incredible parts in them and optics. That are, I've taken a few apart, and my wife uses a mirror I took out of there for her eye makeup. She says it's the best mirror. I don't know, some kind of convex lens or something. But there's a crazy amount of excellent machined parts in there. I made a roller table for my table saw out of the rollers in a copying machine. It's just, you know, it's kind of crazy. America discards more stuff than a third world country could ever make.
Well, I think that's part of the maker culture, this idea that we can be creators more than consumers and rethink things, you know, that you've used the rollers. The stuff inside of machines is so literally well machined. They're beautiful parts, and repurposing them to use them for your table saw, you know, that's the beauty of making and tinkering to me.
Well, Karen, thanks so much for being with us today. That's Karen Wilkinson. She's the co-author of The Art of Tinkering.